Number 11. Ikara 11. We skipped a few in the middle, as you know. Now, some of the Ikarim are more triggering to people than others. And this is one which really gets people going. Meaning, in my experience, people don't get that excited when you debate what does exactly did it mean about the God's unity. Yeah, they're usually pretty, Hashem Echad, and you can say, well, does that mean you can't say anything positive about God or negative about, you know, and then they kind of say, okay, whatever, that sounds like philosophy. But when you suggest to people that there isn't total Hashgacha Pratis on all things in the world, then some people totally melt down. And I've had this in the school. I've had this in the school with teachers who get very upset that the women are being taught that there's different views on this. And it's interesting why this is quite so kind of triggering, because when I think you get into the weeds, you'll see that this is actually really not such a controversial one. And the reason that people are so embedded, if you like, in the total Hashgacha Pratis is really about Kabbalah, and which is interesting, and we'll talk about why that is. But we will look at this in two parts. We'll look today in part one and next week in part two. All of the excitement is in part two. Okay, but part one is necessary to create the foundation. So you've got to come back next week. Is it Purim next? No, it's not Purim next week, right? It's not Tanis Esther on Sunday. No, it's whatever it is. Next week's fine. Okay, please God. Okay, fine. Good. Now, I will also give the following by way of a brief introduction. We said in the last Ikar that the Rambam says very clearly that God knows absolutely everything. God's knowledge and God's Hashgacha are not the same thing. Meaning you can say that God has total knowledge of every single molecule in the entire universe. And by the way, we saw at the end of last time that the Rambam, the non-mystic, allegedly, says that God knows everything because God knows himself. Okay? And then from God's perspective, everything is just an extension of God's self. From our perspective, it looks like we're independent. And this is independent. And everything is individual and fragmented. But from the perspective of the other side, from the Mitzido, as they say in Kabbalah, from God's perspective, everything is one. So God's knowledge is absolute. Even if we turn around and say, not every person or not everything in the world has Hashgacha Pratit, is God, you know, running the world around this particular ant or this particular leaf or this particular person, that doesn't say anything about God's knowledge. So God's knowledge is one thing and God's Hashgacha is a separate thing. So get those clear. It doesn't imply that God doesn't know what's going on. The Rambam says very clearly that God's knowledge is absolute just by virtue of God being God. Fine. Also, just get clear the word Hashgacha. I have a lot of people, when they, you know, haven't spelt these things, talk to me about Hashgacha and they get the Kuf and the Gimel mixed up. And they talk about, what's my Hashgacha? With a G. Okay, there's no such thing as Hashgacha. There's no thing as Hashgacha. It's Hashgacha and Hashgacha. Yeah? Hashgacha means supervision. So a Mashgiach. Yeah? Hashgacha. Okay, Mashgiach. A Mashgiach in a restaurant overlooks and supervises everything. So too God overlooks and supervises the world. And of course this raises also the question of Tzadik or Ralo. Why is it that bad things happen to good people? Which, by the way, wasn't really the question so much asked in the classic time of Rishonim. They were much more worried about the question of why do good things happen to bad people. We today are all obsessed and assume that we're all good. These people are all great. They're wonderful people, and I'm a wonderful person. We're all wonderful people, so how can this be happening to me? The assumption, probably more in the time of the Rambam, is that, like, I'm such a wonderful person. Everybody is, messed up, and everything is, everyone's making mistakes. And so it's more of a question, how can such a good thing happen to a bad person? Because it's easier to spot a bad person than a good one. Yeah, I don't know who's a good person. He looks like he's from, she's from, but I know what goes on behind closed doors. But if I see this as a robber and an abuser and a murderer, who else? I mean, it's hard to say, well, they're a hidden tzaddik. So if they have a good life, the question is like, how can this person have a good life when they're such a bad person? As opposed to, why is this happening to this person? They're so nice. I don't know, maybe they're not so nice. Maybe it's all fake. Yeah.
Just going back to what you said with the Rambam.
Yes.
You said, like, God's knowledge and Hashgacha is separate, basically.
Yes.
But doesn't Hashgacha fall under the umbrella of God's knowledge?
It's related. Meaning, the question, God knows everything. The question is he going to run the world around you or me. I mean, God knows everything that's going on, but what is going to influence what's happening next? Is it what Hadara needs? Or is it what the human race needs? Or is it some tzaddik down the road and everything's happening to you because of her? So that's more the question of how God is going to run the world. Okay, so let's get into this right now. This is a really interesting topic, but again, I think should be less triggering than people find it. Number one, says the Rambam, Hayisod HaChadasar, principle number 11, is a short piece. Shehu Yitzele Noten Schal Mi Shemekayim Tzivui HaTorah, God gives reward to those who keep the Torah, the mitzvahs of the Torah, the onesh and punishment, Lemisha Ove'al Azharoteha. Okay, schar va'onesh, reward and punishment. The shischaro hayoter gadol, and the biggest, the main schar, is olam haba. Is olam haba. The onsho hayoter gadol, and the main, the biggest punishment, who are karet, is not having olam haba. Karet means not having a spiritual life after death. That like an animal or like a non-human. Of whatever, when you're gone, you're just gone, finished. There's no future world. That's karet. Now, the first thing the Rambam therefore says is, if you want to get into a discussion about schar va'onesh, about reward and punishment, the first thing you've got to realize is you're really talking about olam haba. That's where it's all happening. And we're going to see that for the Rambam and for pretty much everybody, what's happening in this world is not ultimately schar va'onesh. It's not reward and punishment. It's direction. It's musa. It's helping us to make the choices that we need to make. It's waking us up. It's kapara. It's all sorts of systems which need to happen so that we will make the best of this world. But it's not really reward and punishment. No one's getting ultimately rewarded for what they did in this world or punished for what they did in this world. It's all in the world to come, which makes most sense because the world to come is the more real world where their neshama, which is making the decisions at the end of the day, faces the consequences. Yes.
Aren't there different types of punishments?
Oh yes, there's lots. The world is complicated.
Right, no, but some of the punishments.
Aren't there different types of punishments?
Right, but some of the punishments happen in this world.
Good. So we're gonna have to decide, are they punishments or are they consequences? For example, the Rambam is going to say, if we say that reward and punishment is in the next world, is what we say, how do we make sense of the Shema? I think we'll see this source inside. The Shema, which says that if you do my commands, you'll have rain, and you'll have money, and you'll have sustenance, and you'll have good things in life, and a nice parnasa. And if you don't keep my commandments, then you'll have plague, and droughts, and famine. Doesn't that sound like reward and punishment? Says the Rambam, no. That's not reward and punishment. That's consequence. Meaning, you give us, an expensive item to a nine-year-old, and you see they don't look after it properly. They're throwing it on the floor. So you take it away. You say, obviously, you're not old enough for that. I bought you a beautiful pen to write with, and you're asked to saw it on the floor. You can have it back when you know what to do with it. So, too, the Rambam says, God gives us things in this world for the purpose of connecting with the next world. Yeah, the next world is the world of true connection with God. So everything in this world is a means to an end. That's what Chazal say. Everything in this world is like the dressing room. I think we've talked about this. On the way to the banquet. The next world is the banquet. But everything in the dressing room is essential. There's not one thing in this world that cannot be used in a positive, constructive way in order to connect you with true reality, ruchnias, olam haba, etc. So if you're abusing this world, if you're taking the big car and the big house and the fancy food and the fancy wine and you're just doing to enjoy it, not using it properly. I mean, I'm not saying you're not allowed to enjoy it. I'm just saying that your focus is not, when you go to the dressing room to get to the banquet, you don't spend the whole night in the dressing room playing with the fancy toys. You've got a fancy, swanky hotel, so you've got like a thing place that does your shoes. You know, I mean, you're not into shoe polishing probably so much, but you've got a little pressy little thing, you spend the whole night there. Whoa, look at this. This is great. And the answer is, well, why are you spending the whole night here? This is just so you look nice in the banquet. You can't walk into the banquet wearing jeans and a t-shirt. You look like a fool and you'll feel embarrassed. So you can't go to the next world without having prepared. But if you play in this world with all of the toys, then like, what are you using this world for? So God takes them away, says the Rambam. I'm not going to give you more stuff for you to abuse it. You can't have it because you're not using it right. But if you use this world in a way which, according to the mitzvahs, which is to connect with Hashem positively, spiritually, then you can have more because God's going to give you more because you're using it properly. But it's not schar va'onesh, it's not reward and punishment. So what's very important for us is to first understand that reward and punishment are in the next world. Since they're in the next world, and the next world is God, what did we say about God's knowledge? How do we answer the question last week? How do I have free will if God knows what I'm about to do? How did the Rambam address that? What did he say? Remind me what we said last week. You don't know anything about God's knowledge. You don't know how God knows anything, because God's knowledge is God. Because the next world is God. And therefore, reward and punishment, i.e. how you connect with God in the next world, is God. So do you think you have any idea of reward and punishment, of what that is? You can give a moshul, maybe this feels like this, or imagine this, or you know what. But the next world is God. You don't have any real understanding of the next world. So once you say that reward and punishment is in the next world, then don't bother trying to get your head around it and trying to understand it, because, you know, it's not going to be open to your understanding. That's the first thing. It doesn't mean we shouldn't take it seriously, but don't think you can get your head around it, because you won't. So the next world is a real focus. I've already talked a lot about this, he says. Moshe says to God, please forgive the Jewish people, and if not, wipe me. I'll take it for them. Wipe me out of your book. He says this in the Chumash. I will take the punishment for them. And God responds to him, no, that's not how it works. Mi asher chatali, whoever sinned against me, they will have their own consequence. You don't take one for the team. You don't die to save the world. Yeah, this is not Christianity we're talking about here. Everyone is responsible for their own olam haba. No one can do it for you. Okay? Raya al yideas anishma, that God knows everything that's going on. Okay, v'amamre, people who listen and people who rebel, latet zchal ezeveh onesh lezeh. And to give reward to them and punishment to them. But again, not in this world. This world is different. But we're going to spend the rest of these two shiurim talking about this world, because I can't tell you anything about the next world. Yeah? When people talk about tzadik v'ra, why is a good bad thing happening to a good person? They're talking about this world. They're not talking about the next world. Okay, fine. So let's have a look at Tanakh. See what Tanakh says about this. Because Tanakh talks a lot about this. Looking number two. Gadol ha'itza. How great is your advice? We saw this pasuk a little bit of it last week. For Rav Halila, how great are your actions, says Yirmiyahu. Asher einecha pekuchot al kol derchei b'nei adam. Your eyes are open on all people. We saw this last week. And then the end of the pasuk, latek le'ish kedrachav. Everybody gets what they deserve. Ukepri ma'alalav. And the fruits of their own actions. Everybody is going to get what they deserve, and the fruits of their actions. And look what Rashi says in number three. Gadol ha'etza, how great is your advice, or the way you communicate with the world. Says Rashi, she'etzotav gedolot, that your thinking, let's say, is so great. Uma'asav, and your actions are rabim mehasigem, are too much for us to get our head around. Now, is Rashi talking about this world or the next world? Could we be talking about both? Because certainly we can't get our head around the next world. But you can't even get your head around this world. When you start asking questions, why is this happening? Now, we are going to have to take very seriously when things happen to us and use them as a positive, you know, spur to take us in a good direction. We are going to have to think that through and decide what we're going to do about it. We can either sit and complain or moan or be upset or depressed, or we can get up and do something about it, or which of those comes where, whatever. But we're never really going to get our head around, even in this world, why everything's happening to everybody. Because there are so many variables. And that's going to be a very important point. The Rambam is going to introduce with this as well. Even in this world, how do you really have any understanding of why anything's happening? It has to take into account not just the inner life, as well as the outer life of everybody. And you don't know that. It has to take account every one of the 6 billion, 7 billion human beings on the planet, most of whom you've never even thought of. It has to take into account all the future, which you don't know anything about, all the past, which most of us know very little about, not to mention Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba, and forget about if you're into Gilgulim and people coming back as reincarnations, which again, the Rambam's not into, but like once you factor all of this stuff in, you know, we don't even have computers that can predict the weather accurately, like a week in advance in most places, like minute to minute. Why not? There's just so many variables. The wind could go this way, the wind could go that way. Obviously, it's more complicated than that. I'm not a meteorologist. But, like, you don't know really why anything's happening to anyone, given all of those factors. And who could know? So when people usually say this isn't fair, it's not usually an intellectual statement. It's usually an expression of pain. Now, pain is perfectly reasonable because we're emotional creatures. We feel pain. We feel emotional pain. And that's why when you're going to a shiva house, God forbid somebody loses a relative, and it's very tragic, or even if it's not tragic, but usually if it's, I mean, some shiva houses, you know, the person lived a long life, and they're successful life, and it's more like almost like a celebration of the person's life, which is, okay, they're still dead, and it's still sad, but nevertheless, some are very tragic. What are you going to say? I mean, halachically, you don't say anything, because there's nothing to say, but whatever you say is a response to the person's pain. No one's asking for an intellectual, philosophical analysis of why could it be that this would happen to this person. And that, like, no one wants that, no one needs that, you don't have anything useful to say anyway. So it's very important to understand when people ask a question on this topic, why do bad things happen, why did this happen, it's usually an emotional question. That doesn't mean it's a bad question. It's a good question, but it's an emotional question. And emotional questions need emotional responses, not intellectual responses. Because intellectually, there's not much you can respond. We don't really have the head to get at all to get around all the variables. Okay, fine. Let's go on a little bit more. If you look in Tanakh, in Tehillim, and by the way, Tehillim should be seen as a source of a lot of Jewish thought, Machshevet Yisrael. Sometimes people talk about the Sifrei Emet. This is like more like an academic three svarim which need to be mined for Jewish thought, Jewish ideas, Jewish philosophy. Which are they? Aleph is. Emilia, this is your book. Aleph is Iov.
No.
Okay. Which is Job. Okay, the book of Job. Mem is Mishlei. And Taf is Tehillim. Now we used to, Mishlei is obviously Proverbs, whatever, but we people very rarely study Mishlei. But it's full of really deep stuff. Very, very interesting. Which is the bit of Mishlei that everybody knows? The last Perek, which is? Eish Yischal Miyimtza. But you really have to read the whole of Mishlei to know who is this woman that he's talking about. Meaning the whole of Mishlei has a debate about this woman, this is the Eish Yischal, what's it about? It's not really about Mrs. Cohen who just made a lovely Shabbos and her husband's singing it to her. That's just a shtick, really. I mean, it's nothing wrong with him singing, saying thank you to his wife. That's not what Eish Yischal is about. Eish Yischal is about Torah. Eish Yischal is about wisdom, about Chochmah. That's the woman. There's the great woman and there's the dangerous woman in Mishlei. Anyway, whatever, fine. And then Tehillim, we're used to saying them, you know, reciting them, but actually when you analyze them, they're full of Jewish thought, Jewish wisdom. Have a look at number four. This is Tehillim Lamed Daled, which you know quite well. Yiru es Hashem Kedoshav, ki ein machzor l'reyav. There is no lack for who? L'reyav. What's l'reyav mean? Those who fear God. Those who fear God will never lack anything. Oh, well, what about those who don't fear God? Are they going to get a different deal? Sounds like they're getting a different deal. Kfirim Rashu. Vura'evu. Okay, the lions, the young lions cry out and are hungry, but Dorashe Hashem lo yasru kol tov. Those people who seek God, they will never lack anything. Well, what about the others? What about people who don't seek God? Are they going to get a different kind of deal? Einei Hashem ala tzadikim. The eyes of God are on the tzadikim. Voznav al shavatam. And his ears are listening to their cry. So are the tzadikim getting more attention than other people? Do they have more hashgacha pratis? It sounds like there are different levels. Korov Hashem l'nishburei lev. God is close to certain people. To who? To the broken-hearted. The edaki ruach yoshia, and the depressed. Those who are really connecting, reaching out, etc., etc. And Tehillim often brings this kind of idea that there are certain people who are getting more, certain people who are getting less. So we'll say it's not a radical idea when we get down to it, which we'll see in the Rambam and most of the other Rishonim, that actually different people are getting different levels of Hashgacha. Meaning you want providence, you want God to run around the world around you, you need to earn it. You need to have that relationship to have that relationship. Okay, and again, some people get a bit triggered by this, but we'll see. It's actually based on a lot of solid sources, and we'll see where the Rambam goes with this. Okay, so fine. Let's get into some of the Gemaras that deal with this. So far we've talked about the general ideas, where is Hashgacha, this world, where is reward and punishment, the next world, etc. Okay, number five. Says the Gemara, V'amar b'chanina, Ein Adam Nokef Etzba'o. A person doesn't bang their thumb, milamata, down here, Ela in Kain Machrizin Alav Milamala. Only if it's announced above. Meaning if you bang your thumb, that's not just a random event. You banging your thumb has some kind of spiritual root up there. Shine Emar, Me Hashem it's Ade Gaver Konanu, okay? Ume Hashem it's Ade Gaver Va'adam Mayavin Darko. What do you know what's going on? God runs the world. You don't run the world. You think you know what's going on. But even if you hit your thumb, that comes from above. Now, we're going to have to analyze this a lot. We have to unpack that. What does that mean, that comes from above? That means God made you hit your thumb? What if you were just not being careful and banging in a nail, not even thinking about it, just fed up, and you hit your thumb because you're foolish? Does God make things happen through people who are being foolish? If you stand out in the rain without a coat on and you catch a cold, you say, oh, it's the minas shamayim. Is it minas shamayim? Or is it because you're a fool? Like, where do you draw the line between that? And how complicated does that get? Someone gets sick. Are they sick because it's like from above, they declared this, or they sick because they didn't eat healthily, or they didn't exercise, or this? Where are you going to draw those lines? We're going to have to look at that as well. But somehow there is some correlation between what's going on here and what's going above. What does above mean? You tell me, what could above mean? When you read this, it says, you don't bang your thumb unless it was announced above. Could be Hashem. But does Hashem intervene on a micromanaging level with everything that goes on? Yes or no?
Some say yes, some say no.
Okay, well, when you jump off a cliff and you go down, is Hashem pushing you down? No, Hashem created a system. That system comes from Hashem. Hashem created the world. And that system is called gravity. And gravity works in such a way that if you jump off a cliff, you go down. Now, is Hashem making that happen? Of course. But is Hashem making that happen directly? No, there's a system. Or at least from our perspective, there's a system. Mm-hmm. Gravity works in this way. There are rules of nature. Okay?
Could it also be that, because our neshama is, part of our neshama is with us, and part of our neshama is above. So, on a certain level, it also could be coming from the part of
Rashi
Neshama that's above.
Right. Okay, I don't know exactly what that means. I have to think about it. What it means is coming from. Again, if I do something really foolish and I say that, stand out in the rain, where is that coming from? That's a bad choice. It was a foolish choice. I should
where
have had a coat on.
From that I did such a thing.
Okay, good. So then you can psychoanalyze, like, where, why am I making these crazy decisions? What is wrong with me? Is my brain wired the wrong way? And actually, do I have a syndrome which is making me go outside without a coat on? And what I actually need is good therapy and medication rather than a telling off. That's an interesting question, actually. There comes a point when that's a real question with some actions and behaviors. You know, people are crazy with their kids because their kids are behaving crazy, and then they suddenly realize, actually, my kid has a diagnosis. Okay, diagnoses are all very, you know, you need a diagnosis to get your medical insurance and all that. Okay, not getting into that now. But that's a very good question. Have a look at number six. This is very interesting. Sometimes you don't know. Sometimes you look at something and say, this is Minas Shamayim, and someone else will turn around and say, this is the opposite. This is a very fascinating case. Number six. Tanur Rabbanan, the Gemara says, Maaseh Be'echav. Oh, by the way, before I get to that, Lamala could also mean mazel. We're going to talk about mazel soon. What is mazel? Mazel are systems, that's what I meant to say, like gravity. Gravity is a physical system. Mazel is a spiritual system. So that's also lamala. That's also part of what's been set up. So when it says you don't bang your thumb unless it comes from above, so that might not mean from the boss above, but from the system above. Yeah?
If you, the angels?
What's that? Yeah, all part of that system. There are systems. Meaning if you mess up at work, if you work for Amazon and you mess up, you don't get a letter from Jeff Bezos. You get a letter from your line manager who says, I don't think it's working out, please go work for someone else. Okay? And does Jeff Bezos want you to be fired? Correct, of course he does. But he's delegated to people who deal with that kind of thing. You don't, and when you want a raise, you don't daven to Jeff Bezos. You know, you don't write to Jeff Bezos. You write to, now we're going to see, well, is that okay? Even if we say that there are systems, Malachim, Mazel, etc., can we daven to them? Or do we always skip to the senior manager? Like, Jews never go to the middle management. It's like, I want to see your supervisor. Yeah. I'm not talking to you. Everyone else talks to you. I need to see your supervisor. Okay? So we'll have to see when we get back to the fifth ikkah, which is that when we daven, is it okay to daven through systems? Or is that actually not okay? And we'll see there's not so much clarity on that. Yeah.
I don't want to get too sidetracked, but does that mean like going to like a
Yes, we'll talk about that when we talk about the fifth ikkah. Because that's going up the chain. When we're davening, in this ikkah we are seeing how do things come down. But the other question is how do things go up? And that's when you're davening. We're not dealing with that in the sikkah, but we will. Sadiqim, dead people, yeah, etc. We'll get there. Okay, so overlook. Number six. Tan Rabban. Masi be'echad shemesa ishto. There was a tragedy happened. A man, his wife died. Vehinicha ben liyanak. And liyanak. And they left a baby that needed feeding. What's he going to do? Now, if you didn't have a mother to feed a baby back in the day, how did you feed a baby? A nursemaid. You hired a wet nurse, and they're expensive, okay? And the guy has no money. So what do you do if you've got no money? Maybe someone gives you staka, but like you just, the baby dies. The baby's got no food. He didn't have any money to give a wet nurse. He was completely broke. And a miracle happened. He started lactating. Male lactation. Happens. It's very unusual, but it happens. It's a hormonal imbalance. Men start lactating. He started lactating. The heineket benoi, not just lactating, but like a woman. He mamash, like milk came out of him, and he fed this child. Amar Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef heard about this. He didn't see it because he was blind, but he also, everyone has heard about this. He said, Barei kamo gadol adam zeh. How great must that guy be? What a tzaddik he must be. Shenaase lo neis kazeh. That a neis happened, and he was able to save his child. Amaloy Abaya turned around to him and says, Adarabba, on the contrary, Kama garua adam zeh. What a nebach. What a nebach is this guy. Shenishtan eloy sidre bracious. That the natural cause of events had to be changed because nebach, there was no other way that guy could feed his child. Meaning, if the guy was a tzaddik, he would have got a job, and he would have got a parnasa, and he would have paid a wet nurse. And that's how God would have done it. But nebach, all that could save him was a nace. That doesn't mean he's a tzaddik. So, I don't know, where does this leave you? So, something happens to you, says, oh, it was mamash like a nace. The answer is, well, that's a good thing or that's a bad thing. Now, when did you last think of a nace as being a bad thing? But, like, you know, it's not always so straightforward. There's a piece from Rav Kook about the difference between Yoshua and Gidon. So, when Yoshua fought the battle of Ai, he was told to take all the army with him. And Yeshua says, what, like, for such, you know, first of all, it didn't work, and they had for such a small place, yeah, you have to take everybody, you have to get the army, and blah, blah, blah. And when Gidon fought against the Midianim, God said to him, no, send people back, send people home, until there were 300 people. And Gidon says, how am I going to fight the battle against the massive army of Sisera with 300 men? So the answer is, you know, bitochen, and it was an ace. So Rav Kook says, one of these generations was on a higher level than the other. And the answer is, who was on a higher level? The one that had the nace or the one that didn't have the nace? He says, the one that didn't have the nace. Because Yeshua's generation were on a higher level, so they could see that when we do things in the natural order, then we do them because God makes the natural order. God gives us the strength in order to be able to win the battles. And Gidon, Nebach, was in a situation where all that would get them to recognize God was like a full-blown miracle. That's Nebuch. You need a miracle to recognize God. By the way, today this is a bit of a debate in the Hashkafic world between the Haredim and the religious Zionists. The Haredim say, oh, you think the army wins the wars. You think the IDF is the thing saving Israel. Hashem saves Israel. Yeah? And the religious Zionists, and what do they quote against the IDF? They say, no, it's a pasuk that warns you about this attitude. Says the pasuk, don't come into the land of Israel and say, my strength, I did this. You're guilty of that. And the religious Zionists say, no, read the end of the Pasuk. It says, because you need to recognize that God gives you the strength to do all these things. So at the end of the day, who does all these things? You do. You do. You run the army. You decide the missiles. You run it. Hashem is the one that's giving you the chokhmah, the ideas, the brains, the sleep. Yeah? So it's a question of, do we see God in the miracles or do we see God in the natural world? And how do we know the difference between them? Which is very interesting. The Rambam is going to tell you that even things which look like miracles are probably part of the natural system. And the Ramban is going to tell you that even things that look natural are really miracles. So drawing this line is not so straightforward. Okay, fine. I just thought I'd give you that example. Now let's talk about mazel. Okay, because we've got a long way to go. Amar Reb Siman, Ein lecha kol esev ve'esev she'ein lo mazel. There is no grass in the whole world that doesn't have a mazel, barakia, in the heavens. Shemake oto, that hits it. Like it's commanding it. It's got to do what it says. You don't have a choice. The oimelein, it's saying to it, gda, grow. Every grass has a mazel, like a malach, or a mazel, you can say either way, whatever. Malach is just the same idea. Malach is a messenger. Mazel is also just a messenger. What does the word mazal literally mean? Nozel?
Hmm? Is it luck?
No, it doesn't mean that. It means flow. It means flow. Okay? Something moving from up till from above till below. A nozelet in modern Hebrew is a runny nose. A nezila is a leak through the ceiling, which you will always have in a building if you buy one in Israel in the winter. Leaks come through, fine. Mazal means flow. It's the same idea. A malach is a messenger, someone that's moving, constantly moving to deliver A to B. So there is no grass that doesn't have this mazal above. Now, what does that mean, grass? What does esef mean? You tell me two things that esef could mean. They both mean grass, but what kind of grass? So it could mean a blade of grass, like every blade of grass has its own malach, giving it a, like whatever. Or it could mean every species of grass has a malach. What's the difference? So we'll see that the Rambam is going to say that there's a hashkacha on species. God doesn't involve himself with every blade of grass. There's a system. There's a system. But when it comes to people, there's an individual hashkacha. But not the same for everybody. So it depends on how you translate this. Every grass, every blade of grass, or every species of grass. There's a story with Rav Kook. Rav Kook was walking down the street with one of his Talmidim, I can't remember. I think it might have been Rav Aryeh Levine. And he was like thinking to himself, like, you know, during the week, he's on Shabbos. And he was just like, you know, whatever. And his hands pulled a leaf off a tree. And Rav Kook turned around to him and said, what are you doing? He goes, what do you mean? He goes, you just, Kamalach was on that leaf making it grow. And you just unplugged it. Yeah, on a blade of grass with a malach on it. Which, you know, a bit scary. But it's like all these, you know, you're kind of killing an insect. You know, what are you killing an insect for? A lot of people are very mad not to kill insects unless they're dangerous, etc. Everything has its own malach. Or maybe it means a broader idea. And the Rambam is into this as well. It's a mistake. People say the Rambam is not into mazel. The Rambam doesn't believe in mazel. That is a mistake. The Rambam doesn't believe in astrologers because he says they're all cheats. They're all charlatans. They're all trying to trick you. Like horoscope readers. I'm not talking about the modern ones in the paper that say useless things like, if you're a Sagittarius, you'll have to make big decisions this week. You know, they mean anything you want them to mean. But even if someone gives you like horoscope advice, like don't go to Beit Began on Thursday, you'll fall down a hole. Yeah? It says around them, it's just rubbish. And you can always, people are taken in by it. I know a woman, a travel agent, she came to my shiurim. She said she was called by a woman who said, you have to cancel my flight to New York from Israel because I went to whatever they call these people. What do they call these people? Astrologer. I went to my astrologer and they told me the plane's going to crash. So the woman said to me, I told her that the ticket is a non-refundable ticket. She goes, I don't care. I'm not getting on the plane. The plane's going to crash. So the woman cancelled the ticket and she lost like $1,500, whatever it was. The plane didn't crash. So the travel agent said to me, she said, I called her afterwards and said, I just want to tell you the plane didn't crash. And she said, yeah, but if I'd have been on the plane, it would have crashed. You can't talk to these people. What are you going to say to them? Okay? I had a student in Midrash at Rachel who had a Shaila. She had a date set up for her. She was not old, but she was late 20s. Yeah? Not so easy just to turn down a good shidduch. And there was a date that was suggested for her in London. And she was from London originally. She was in Israel. And she says, I want to go back to London to go out with this guy. And her mother was like really into astrology. So my mother checked and said to me, she went to her astrologer. She said, I mustn't go because it's dangerous. What should I do? It was really interesting, Shaila. Now she is not allowed to listen to astrologers. We'll see. But now she has a kibud av ha'eim, Shaila. Like, what are you going to do with her mother? Like, her mother's going nuts and crying. You're going to die. You're going to crash. You know, yada, yada, yada. Should she go? Should she not go? Interesting, Shaila, no? What should she do? In the end, I think she went, but she didn't marry the guy. She married someone else, though. And then she made Aliyah. Okay, fine. Number eight. But the Rambam believes in mazel, because mazel is just part of the system. DNA is mazel. DNA is the system, the way you're wired. Yeah, the way you were brought up. My parents were gangsters living in gangland. Yeah, that's part of your mazel. That's part of the way you were, things you can't control. Hey, is a well-known... You, someone else read this. Nice and loud, please, so you get it on the... you have to speak very loud so my recorder will get it. Well, no one's volunteering over here. No, no, it's all right. What, you're a volunteer? Go on, then. I don't have favourites, it's just you need to be recorded. Carry on.
Number eight?
Yes, very loud, please.
Okay. It is a well-known fact that the philosophers, when they discuss in their works the order of the universe, assume that the existing order of things in the sublunary
world means the Rambam understands, like Aristotle, that everything that's happening is happening from the moon down, and from the moon up there's different systems. By the way, this was a big debate when the first man landed on the moon. When Neil Armstrong landed on the moon... Yes, he did. We don't believe in conspiracy theories.
Yeah, right. Okay.
When Neil Armstrong landed on the moon, and they can answer the flag and all that stuff as well, there were lots of articles that were in the Jewish papers. Does this disprove the Rambam? Because the Rambam, like Aristotle, held that everything from the moon level up through the planets and the stars was different systems. And the guy landed on the moon. He said, look, it's just rocks like everything else. Yeah? The Ramban, Nachmanides, always said that everything in the universe is physical, made from the same physical stuff. And the spiritual world is beyond the universe. Okay, fine, so there was a big question, did Nachmanides win over Maimonides when Neil Armstrong landed on the moon? You can find those articles from 1969. I was there, not on the moon, but I was there. I was like 9 months old, so I don't know what I was taking in. I don't think my parents were watching it, actually, because it was in the middle of the night in England or something. Okay, fine. So it's a well-known fact of philosophers. Good. Assume that the existence of things is sublunary world. Carry on.
Of transient beings depends on forces which emanate from the spheres.
Meaning everybody knows that there's forces coming out from the stars, you know, affecting what's going on in the world. Carry on.
We've mentioned this several times. In like manner, sages say, there is no single herb below without its corresponding star above that beats upon it and commands it to grow. The term mazal, literally meaning a constellation in the zodiac, is also used of every star. They have thus clearly expressed that even each individual being in this world has its corresponding star.
You and I have our mazal, and we're under that mazal. Again, for mazal, today we don't believe in astrology, but we believe in DNA and nurture and nature and all that stuff. Carry on.
Although the influences of the spheres extend over all beings, there is also the influence of a particular star directed to each particular species.
Oh, he says grass means a species, not a blade of grass. A species of grass has a direct, you know, muzzle on it. Carry on.
A fact noticed also in reference to several forces in one organic body, for the whole universe is like one organic body.
Which is, by the way, really interesting as a statement if you're into conservation or environmental, and like the whole universe is like one body and has to be treated like a body in a different way. It's a very interesting way of perspective. But the Rambam therefore says, yeah, sure, we believe in mazal. He certainly doesn't want you to pray to a mazal. We'll get to that when we get there. But we believe there are systems. Not everything is God intervening, micromanaged. Look at number nine. Amar Rava. Says Rava. Chaye, how long you live? Boni, how many children you have? Umazoni, and how much money you have? Loi b'schut atalya milsa. It's got nothing to do with your schut. It's got nothing to do with whether you're a tzaddik or not a tzaddik, good person, bad person. It's got nothing to do with that. But what's it dependent on? Ela b'mazla tali milsa. It depends on your mazla. The harabah v'rav chista travayhu rabbanon tzaddiki havo. Because I'll tell you, These two rabbis, Rav Chisda and Rabba, were both great rabbis, great tzaddikim. Mar Matzli ve'Asi Mitra. One daven for rain, and it rained. Umar Matzli, and the other daven for rain, ve'Asi Mitra, and it rained. Meaning both of these were rabbis that even if there was a drought, they would walk up and they would daven from the Omer for rain, and it would rain. They were great tzaddikim. But look at their lives. Rav Chisda, Chayatishin v'Taratin Shnim. Rav Chisda lived to the age of 92. Rabba, Chaya Arbaim, he lived till he was 40 and he died at 40. Bei Rav Chisda, in Rav Chisda's home, Shitin Hiluli, he made 60 weddings through his long life of children and grandchildren and nieces, nephews. Bei Rabba, and in Rabba's home, Shitin Tichli, they had 60 funerals. Everybody died. Bei Rav Chisda, in Rav Chisda's home, Samida Lakalbi, there was fine flour for the dogs. The Loimit Boy, and they still had no shortage. Meaning they fed pastries to the dogs. They had so much money. Bei Rabba, in Rabba's home, Nama Desari, there was like oat bread, or barley bread, which is like animal food, Le'inshi, for the people. The Loimit Dachach, and they couldn't get hold of it. Meaning, here you have two very righteous people. One is not better than the other. They grow up, and one had a life of complete disastrous sorrow, no money, and died young. And one had a long life with lots of money. What's it got to do with? It wasn't had to do with how good they were. It was about mazel. The question is, can you escape your mazel? You're convinced of it. Okay? So let's have a look. Look at number 10. It says Tosfos, Akol lefi zchuto. Oh, there's other Gemaras that say, doesn't everything depend on a person's merit? Which is a person's like choices. Perush, what does that mean? The fin mazlo. No, it means mazel. It doesn't mean, when it says schud, it means mazel. Meaning ultimately it's always down to mazel. And there are many, many Gemaras that seem to imply that your mazel is very important. Yes, I'll see that.
So maybe you can't escape your mazel.
And we'll see that according to some you can.
Or you can maximize
good
your situation.
You work within your situation. We'll get to that right now. So let's go really quickly, number 11. So these are English translations of, because I just wanted to get through this quickly, Gemara's at the end of Masechet Shabbos to deal with mazel. Very interesting. He was born on the first day of the week, Sunday, shall be a man without one... Actually, someone else read this. Belly, carry on. He was born on the first day of the week.
He was born on the first day of the week, Sunday, shall be a man without one thing in him. What does without one thing in him mean? Shall we say without one virtue? Surely Rav Ashi said, I was born on the first day of the week.
Meaning Rav Ashi has plenty of virtues, and he was born on a Sunday. Hence,
it must surely mean one vice. But surely Rav Ashi said, I and Dimi
Ben Kakusta, some robber guy, gangster, okay?
Were born on the first day of the week. I am a king, and he is the captain of thieves. Rather, it means either completely virtuous or completely wicked. What is the reason? Because light and darkness were created on that day.
Meaning someone who's born on a Sunday is influenced by Sunday, and Sunday is a day that was Orav HaChoshech, extremes, so they'll be extremely good or extremely bad. Okay, so now you're thinking, okay, who here was born on a Sunday? You were born on a Sunday. Okay. Are you extremely good or extremely bad?
Extremely good.
Okay, everyone agrees extremely good, or they didn't say anything. Okay, carry on. He was born on the second day.
He who is born on the second day of the week will be bad-tempered.
Okay, bad-tempered. Who was born on a Monday? Jeannie, you are the least bad-tempered person in the school.
Oh, you don't know her, Rabbi.
Oh, really?
I get hungry.
Okay, fine. Okay, carry on.
What is the reason? Because the waters were divided thereof.
Machlokas was created on Monday. God divided between the upper and the lower. So that's Machlokas. You'll be a bad-tempered person. Carry on. Tuesday.
He who is born on the third day of the week will be wealthy and
unchaste, meaning you'll have a lot of money, but you'll have no sneers. Why?
What is the reason? Because herbs were created thereon.
Grass goes everywhere. It multiplies everywhere, and it has no limitations. It has all, but it has no boundaries. Okay, so if you're born on a Tuesday, good news, lots of money. Bad news, not so good on the sneers front. So again, I'm sure you know lots of people born on Tuesday who are like poor and very tsanua. So what's this talking about? Carry on.
He who is born on the fourth day of the week
Wednesday
will be wise and of retentive memory. What is the reason? Because the luminaries were suspended there.
Okay, the sun and the moon. Okay, who was born on a Wednesday? Wednesday, okay. Looks good to be born on a Wednesday. And he goes on and on and on and on and on. Let's go on a little bit. I'll just read the end of the paragraph. He was born on the Sabbath, will die on the Sabbath. Because the great day of the Sabbath was desecrated on his account. Really?
But that's not true. A lot of people, when actuaries are working out like how to how much life insurance premium to charge you, they don't say, well, which day of the week were you born? Because, you know, if you're born on the Shabbos, we're not covering you for Saturdays. You know, they don't say that. And most people who are born on the Shabbos don't die on Shabbos. So what does it mean? And then Rabbi Chanina said to them, go to the next paragraph, Rabbi Chanina said to them,
his disciples, go out and tell the son of Levi.
Levi, which was the first one, Yeshua ben Levi. Okay, carry on.
Not the constellation of the day, but that of the hour is the determining influence.
Ah, so Rabbi Chanina is very important. He says it's not even just the day, it's the hour. If you were born, like astrologers will say that at every hour of the day, there's a constellation coming up over the horizon. Now, at night time you can see them on a clear night, but during the day you can't see them, but they're there. It's just the sun is too bright. So there's always a constellation rising. Right now at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, there's something rising on the eastern horizon. I don't know which constellation it is. It's one of the planets, some of the constellations. Okay, so it's the hour of the day. And he goes through various different hours, someone born under the sun, someone born under Mercury, and go to the end. He was born under Tzedek, underlined.
He who is born under Tzedek, Jupiter, will be a right-doing man,
Zafkan. Okay, Zafkan, you're born under Tzedek, you'll be a Tzedek. Carry on.
Rav Nachman ben Isaac observed, right-doing in good deeds.
Now, here's Chassidah's point. Carry on.
He who is born under Mars will be a shedder of blood.
Oh, Mars is the red planet. And you can see it glinting red in the sky. And obviously they saw that. Every other star, pretty much every other star is white. And this star is flashing white and red. So it's blood. Okay, Rav Ashi observed.
Rav Ashi observed, either a surgeon, a thief, a slaughterer, or a circumciser.
Meaning you can choose. You can't escape from your mazel, says Rav Chanina, but you can choose how to express it. You need to shed blood, so either you'll be a murderer or you'll be a surgeon. Either way, you'll get plenty of blood, but you'll do it either in a good way or a bad way. Carry on, Rabba said.
Rabba said, I was born under Mars. Abaye retorted, you too inflict punishment and kill.
What do you mean? You're a judge. You send people for penalties to be whipped or whatever it is. You also draw blood in your own way, but you chose to channel it through being a judge. Now, Rabbi Chanina says, you cannot escape your mazel, but you can direct your mazel. You can be the person who is the surgeon rather than the killer, etc. However, there is another opinion, and that's the opinion that we normally follow. And therefore, when I asked you, are you bound by your mazel, you all went no. Because we'll see now, Rabbi Yochanan, which is the one we usually follow, says no. Look at number 12. Itzmah. Rabbi Chanina Oymer. Oh, here he is again. Rabbi Chanina says, mazel machkim, mazel makes you wise. Meaning, how your IQ is a lot down to your mazel. Both your DNA and what kind of school you went to, right? Mazel ma'ashir, how much money you have is a lot down to your mazel. Who you were born to, what kind of, etc. Yesh mazel Yisrael, the Jewish people have mazel. Rabbi Yochanan says, ein mazel Yisrael. Now don't get this wrong, guys. Rabbi Chanina, who says, yesh mazel Yisrael, he holds that you're stuck with your mazel, but you can direct it. Rabbi Yochanan, who says, ein mazel b'Yisrael, he doesn't mean there is no mazel. He means that there is a mazel, but you can always escape it if you have the right schut. So let's see. Shinema. And he brings, oh, minayin she'ein mazel b'Yisrael. How do we know there's no mazel b'Yisrael? Shinema v'yotze oto achutza. Second line of the end. God brings Abraham outside. You know the whole story? He goes through the whole story here. I'm Abraham lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. God says to, Abraham says to God, Ribono shel Olam, master of the world, ben beiti yoreshoti. That's the quote from the Pasuk. My servant will inherit me. I have no children. I can't have children. Amaloi, so he says, love. God says, no. Ki imasa yitzem imeecha. Someone coming out from your own body will inherit from you. You will have a son. Amalafanath, he says to God, Ribono shel Olam, nistakati beitzdugnina sheli. I've looked in my star signs. The Aini Royla Hoylid Ben. I can't have children. I'm not able to have children. My mazel prevents it. Amalei says to him, okay, go out. What does it mean, go out? So literally the pshat is go out from your tent and look at the stars. But it means, no, same it's Tegnin Shulcha. Go out from your mazel. Shame mazel Yisrael. You can escape your mazel. But maybe you need to be Abraham. Go have a look in number 13. Let's read quickly. Who's going to read this real quick? Someone else can read quick? I'm going to read this real quick. From Samuel 2, this is not the prophet Samuel, this is Shmuel in the Gemara. We learn that Israel is immune from planetary influence. Again, not that you're immune, but you can escape. For Samuel and Ablat was a non-Jew, friend of Samuel, like a philosopher, and Shmuel was a Rav, was sitting while certain people were going to a lake. Said Ablat to Samuel, that man is going but will not return. for a snake will bite him and he will die. So Shmuel says, if he's an Israelite, replied Shmuel, he'll go and return. While they were sitting, he went and returned. Thereupon Ablat arose and threw off the man's knapsack and found a snake cut up and lying in two pieces. Shmuel said to him, what did you do? Meaning somehow or other, the snake that was in his bag was cut in two and they didn't even realize there was a snake there. What did you do? So he says, every day we pulled our bread and ate it. But today one of us had no bread. And he was ashamed. Said I to him, to them, I will go and collect the bread. And when I came to him, I pretended to take bread from him so he shouldn't be ashamed. Meaning, the workers, they collect bread from everybody, put it in a kupa, and then they divide it all for lunch. One guy had forgotten to bring his lunch. And he realizes, oh, I'll collect the bread. Because he knew, and he goes around to everybody, and he like pretends to take from this guy so he won't feel embarrassed. He won't realize, everyone won't realize that he forgot to bring his bread. Okay, good. So he says to him, you've done a good deed. Said he to him, then Shmuel went out and lectured charity delivers from death, and not from an unnatural death, but from death itself. You saved yourself. Your mitzvah saved yourself. You were going to die. Your mazel was that you would die. You didn't die because of your mitzvah. And then we have a much more famous case. From Rabbi Akiva too, we learn that Israel's paid for planetary influence. Well, Rabbi Akiva had a daughter. You've heard the story, right? Now, astrologers told him on the day she enters the bridal chamber, a snake will bite her and she will die. It's a bit like the Snow White story. Yeah? It's not Snow White. It's Sleeping Beauty. Yeah? He was very worried about this. He was very worried. Rabbi Akiva took it seriously. He didn't say, ah, shtuyot. He was very worried because there's a mazel. She's going to die. On that day of her marriage, she took a brooch and stuck it in the wall, and by chance it penetrated the eye of a serpent. So she'd go into bed at night, on her wedding night, and she took out her brooch and her hair. She sticks it in the wall. It's all dark behind her. And in the morning, it gets light, and there's a snake. She's put it straight through the eye of a snake. There was a snake right over her head, about to bite her. But it didn't. The following morning, when she took it out, the snake came trailing after it. What did you do? Her father asked her. A poor man came to the door in the evening, she replied, and everyone was busy at the banquet, and there was none to attend to him. So I took the portion which was given to me and gave it to him. On her wedding night, she took her bread, and she gave it to a poor person. Wow. You've done a good deed, said he to her. Thereupon, Rabbi Akiva went out and lectured, charity delivers from death, not merely from an unnatural death, but from death itself. Okay, great. So we have these two different opinions, and we generally paskin like Rabbi Yochanan. Ein mazel b'Yisrael. But there's a problem with this. Which is, can you escape from your mazel? Yes. But only if what? Only if you deserve it. Meaning you are in the system. You won't escape from the system. Maybe you can direct your, strengths and weaknesses within the system, like Rabbi Hanina says, but you will only escape from the system if you're able to do the mitzvahs. Are you Rabbi Akiva's daughter? Maybe you are. I'm not saying you're not. But again, it's not automatic. Not everybody gets to escape from mazel. Only those people who are on the level. I don't know who's on the level. You can't see in someone's neshama when they do a mitzvah. Maybe it was the most important thing anyone ever did. Maybe it was like not so big. You can't see. Kaylee, you can have the last word and we'll finish. Yeah.
I just question, is it like nature and nurture in terms of like looking?
No, we don't care about nature and nurture. Nature and nurture are both mazel. Because they're both things that happen against your will. You were born with the DNA you were born with, and you were brought up by the people you were brought up with. Why do I care which is nature and which is nurture? All things outside your control. The span of your free choice is determined and limited by both of those things. And both of them you couldn't control. Okay, let's just do one more source and then we'll finish. Number 14. The Darish Rabbi Hanina ben Papa. Oysa malach hamamona al arayon. The angel that is appointed over pregnancy, Laila Shmo, it's called night. The no-till tipper, he takes a little embryo, little conceived you, umamid alifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he takes it to Hashem. For Omer Lefanav, and it says to Hashem, Ribono Shel Adam, tipa zo, this little embryo, ma tehei aleha, what's going to be with it? Gibor, is he going to be strong, or chalash, or is he going to be weak? Well, that could be also nature or nurture. Strong because you've got good DNA, strong because your parents made you go to the gym. Yeah? Chacham or tipesh, is it going to be clever or stupid? Meaning clever because you have a good IQ, or because your parents sent you to a good school. Ashira ani, you're going to be poor or weak. Meaning these things are mazel. The ilu rosha or tzaddik lo ka'amar. But it never says that you're going to be a rosha or a tzaddik. The Rabbi Chanina, because like Rabbi Chanina, the Amar Rabbi Chanina, very important line, hakol bidei shamayim, chutz mirat shamayim. That even Rabbi Chanina, who says that you can't escape from your mazel, you can still decide if you're going to be a tzaddik or a rosha. You can be a surgeon, or you can be a thief. Rabbi Yochanan says you can even escape from your mazel, but if you have the right schut. Do you or do you not? I don't know. Okay? Yeah. Yeah, sure, absolutely. That's why you get much less merit for doing mitzvahs which come naturally. You get all of the schud for doing the mitzvahs which come hard. Yeah, if you're naturally a kind person like Shkoyach, like I said before, you know, between now and tomorrow morning, you won't murder anyone, Shoshana. I'm banking on it. You want reward for that? You want to daven shacharis tomorrow morning and say, God, I kept the sixth commandment the whole day? You don't get reward for that. You get your grandparents and great grandparents. They get all the reward for that because they brought you up like you are. You don't get the reward for that. Okay, let's stop there. I don't mean to be mean, but I need to let people go. I'll answer your question afterwards, okay? Okay, fine. Thank you, ladies.